So turning to our Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 10. And I believe we are on verse numbers 9 and 10. On page 15. Subhadra. Draupadi, Kunti, Virata, Tanaya, Tatha, Gandhari, Dhritarashtrascha, Yuyutsur, Gautamo, Yamau, Vrikodaras, Cha, Dhomyash, Cha, Striyomatsya, Sutadayaha, Nasehire, Vimuhyanto, Virahang, Sharanga, Dhanbanaha, Subhadra Draupadi Kunti, Virata Tanayatatha, Gandhari Dhritarashtrascha Yuyutsur Gautamo Yamau Vrikodarascha Dhaumyascha Striyomatsya Sutadayaha Nasehire Vimuhyanto Virahang Sharanga Dhanvanaha.
Subhadra Draupadi Kunti.
Subhadra Draupadi Kunti.
Virata Tanaya Tatha.
Virata Tanaya Tatha.
Gandhari Dhritarashtrascha.
Gandhari Dhritarashtrascha. Yuyutsur Gautamo Yamau Vrikodarashva Dhaumya Yashastriyo Striyomatsya Sutadayaha Nasehire Vimuhyanto Virahang Sharanga Dhanvanaha Subhadra Draupadi Kunti
Virata
Tanaya Tatha
Gandhari Dhritarashtrascha
Yuyutsur Gautamo Yamau
Vrikodarascha
Dhaumyascha Striyomatsya Sutadayaha Nasehire Vimuhyanto Virahang Sharanga Dhanvanaha Subhadra Draupadi Kunti Virata Tanaya Tatha Gandhari Dhritarashtrascha Yuyutsur Gautamo Yamau Vrikodarascha Dhaumyascha Striyomatsya Sutadayaha Nasehire Vimuhyanto Virahang Sharanga Dhanvanaha Subhadra Draupadi Kunti Virata Tanaya Tatha Gandhari Dhritarashtrascha Yuyutsur Gautamo Yamau Vrikodarascha Dhaumyascha. Striyo Matsya Sutadaya. Nasihire Vimuhyanto. Virahang Sharangatan Banaha. Subhadra. The sister of Krishna. Draupadi. The wife of the Pandavas. Kunti. The mother of the Pandavas. Virata Tanaya. The daughter of Virata Uttara. Tata. Also. Gandhari. The mother of Duryodhana. Dhritarashtraha. The father of Duryodhana. Cha. And. Yuyutsuhu, the son of Dhritarashtra by his Vaishya wife.
The son of Dhritarashtra by his Vaishya wife.
Gautamaha,
Kripacharya.
Yamau, the twin brothers Nakula and Sahadeva.
The twin brothers Nakula and Sahadeva.
Vrikodaraha,
Bhima.
Cha,
and.
Dhaumyaha,
Dhaumya.
Cha,
and
Striyaha, also other ladies of the palace. Matsya Sutadayaha,
the daughter of a fisherman.
Satyavati, Bhishma's stepmother.
Na,
could not. Sehire, tolerate. Vimuhyantaha,
almost fainting.
Viraham,
separation.
Sharangadanvanaha,
of Sri Krishna who bears a conch in his hand.
Sharanga means conch? I thought he has a bow named Sharanga.
Shank
is a conch.
Yeah.
This is Sharanga. Maybe I might be mistaken, but I thought that's the name of Krishna's... Oh, of Krishna's bow, right? What's Arjuna's...
Gandhi is Krishna, Arjuna's...
Gandhiva is Arjuna's bow. What is Krishna's bow?
Krishna doesn't have a bow.
He doesn't have a bow? He has...
Shankha Chakra Gada Padma.
He has a Shankha, which is named Panchajan.
Panchajan.
Okay. Sharanga. Shank becomes Shar, or it might be another name for Kancha.
Yeah.
At that time, Subhadra, Draupadi, Kunti, Uttara, Gandhari, Dhritarashtra, Yuyutsu, Kripacharya, Nakula, Sahadev, Bhimasena, Dhaumya, and Satyavati all nearly fainted because it was impossible for them to bear separation from Lord Krishna. Please repeat. At that time,
Subhadra
Draupadi
Kunti,
Uttara Gandhari Dhritarashtra, Yuyutsu Kripacharya,
Nakula Sahadev,
Bhimasena,
Dhaumya
and Satyavati,
all nearly fainted
because it was impossible for them to bear separation from Lord Krishna. Purport. Lord Sri Krishna is so attractive for the living beings, especially for the devotees, that it is impossible for them to tolerate separation. The conditioned soul, under the spell of illusory energy, forgets the Lord. Otherwise, he cannot. The feeling of such separation cannot be described, but it can simply be imagined by devotees only. After his separation from Vrindavana and the innocent rural cowherd boys, girls and ladies and others, they all felt shock throughout their lives, and the separation of Radharani, the most beloved cowherd girl, is beyond expression. Once they met at Kurukshetra during a solar eclipse, and the feeling which was expressed by them is heartrending. There is, of course, a difference in the qualities of the transcendental devotees of the Lord, but none of them who have ever contacted the Lord by his direct communion or otherwise can leave him for a moment. That is the attitude of the pure devotee. Vandeham Sri Guru Shri Yata Pada Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tanu Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Nagrita Shri Vishakhanditamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Tinamine Sri Varshabhanavi Devi Daitaya Kripabdhaye Krishna Sambandha Vijnana Daine Prabhave Namaha Madhur Yojvala Premadhya Sri Rupanuga Bhaktida Sri Gaura Kuruna Shakti Vigrahaya Namostute Namaste Gauravani Sri Murtaye Dinatarine Rupanuga Virudhapa Siddhanta Dvanta Harine Namo Gaura Kishoraya Sakshad Vairagya Murtaye Vipralambara Sambhode Padambu Jayate Namaha Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Sachidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate Gaura Virbhava Bhume Stvam Nirdeshta Sajjana Priyaha Vaishnava Sarva Bhaumakshi Jagannathayate Namaha Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratvishe Namaha Panchatattvatmakam Krishna Bhakta Rupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Jayatang Suratau Pangur Mama Manda Matergati Matsarvasva Padam Pojau Radha Madana Mohanau Divyad Vrindaranya Kalpadrumadha Srimad Ratnagara Singhasanastau Srimad Radha Srila Govinda Devau Prashtali Bhiksevyamanau Smarami Sriman Rasa Rasarambhi Vangshi Vata Tatak Sthitaha Karshan Venus Vanair Gopir Gopi Natak Shriestunaha Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vrindayai Tulsi Devyai Priyayai Kashavashacha Krishna Bhakti Prade Devi Satyavatyai Namo Namaha Shri Nishringha Jaya Nishringha Jaya Jaya Nishringha Prahladesha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Bringa Matsamo Nasti Papatma Naparadhi Chakashchana Parihare Pilajame King Bruve Purushottama Yuvati Nang Yata Yuni Yunang Cha Yuvatao Yata Manobhi Ramate Tadvan Manome Ramatang Twayi Bhumaus Kalita Padanang Bhumirevavalambanam Twayi Jata Paradhanang Twameva Sharanang Prabho Govinda Valabhe Radhe Prarthaye Twamahang Sada Twadiyang Iti Janatu Govindo Mang Twaya Saha Radhe Vrindavanadhishe Karunamrita Vahini Kripaya Nijapadabja Dasyang Mahyang Pradiyatam Vande Nanda Vajastri Nang Padarenum Abhikshna Shaha Yasang Harikatod Gitang Punati Bhavata Trayam Namashreshtang Manamapi Sachi Putra Atra Swarupam Shri Rupang Tasyagrajatam Urupuring Maturing Goshtavatim Radha Kundang Girivaram Aho Radhika Madhavasang Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurung Tang Natosmi Adadanas Trinang Dantair Idang Yache Punak Punaha Srimad Rupa Padam Bhoja Rajoham Shyam Bhave Bhave Adir Bala Haridasya Varyo Yad Rama Krishna Charanas Parasha Pramodaha Manang Tanoti Sahago Ganayos Tayor Yat Paniya Suya Vasa Kandara Kanda Mulahi Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Karadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. At that time, Subhadra, Draupadi, Kunti, Uttara, Gandhari, Dhritarashtra, Yuyutsu, Kripacharya, Nakula, Sahadeva, Bhimasena, Domya, and Satyavati all nearly fainted, because it was impossible for them to bear separation from Lord Krishna. So this theme of vipralamba, or separation of the devotees, the feelings of how they can't stand to be separated from Krishna, even for a second, is a recurring theme in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and was elucidated by Lord Chaitanya as very important aspect of understanding the absolute truth, and actually was displayed by Lord Chaitanya. As Prabhupada says here in the purport, how the separation of Radharani, the most beloved cowherd girl, is beyond expression. And so Lord Chaitanya himself displayed that separation of Radharani in his pastimes, Jagannath Puri. And very heart-rendering mood and everything. Krishna doesn't have a bow named Sharanga? I think he does. We should look that up at some point. In the Battle of Kurukshetra, of course, he's not carrying his bow because he's chariot driver, but elsewhere he does shoot arrows and so forth. So his bow is also one of his devotees, like his flute and everything. So we should look that up. But I may be wrong about that. At least the translation, the word for word, says carrying conch shell. Well, he used his bow and arrow to kill certain demons. For example, to kill... actually, he didn't kill the demon Banasura. Banasura had 1,000 arms, and he used his bow and arrow to shoot, and he severed one arm after the other until he only had 4 arms left. Then he let him retain a Vaikuntha body and liberated him that way. This is one of the qualities of Krishna, that he gives liberation to those he kills. That's a special quality that shows that he's actually equal to everyone and he doesn't favor anyone. Even when he's fighting with them, it's his mercy to them. It's because they want to fight with him that he fights with them, and he doesn't hate them, but actually he is gratified that they've given him an opportunity to enjoy this nice fight, and he gives them liberation. But separation, the mood of viparlamba, is very important, and Prabhupada mentions here the special meeting that took place before the Battle of Kurukshetra. I'm pretty sure it was, now that I mention it, I'm pretty sure it's before the Battle of Kurukshetra. But but now that I mention it, I'm not sure of the chronology. When there was an eclipse, on the occasion of an eclipse, I'm sure it must have been before the battle. There was an eclipse, and the residents of Vrindavan took the opportunity to go see Krishna there. They knew that he would be going to Kurukshetra and bathing there because of the eclipse. And so the residents of Vrindavan, they got to meet the residents of Dwarka. Vasudev got to see Nanda Maharaj after some time. The mothers of Krishna and Balaram, Rohini and Devaki got to see Mother Yashoda and praise her. And while they were, Rohini and Mother Devaki were praising Mother Yashoda, Krishna took the opportunity to slip away and to meet with the gopis. And he instructed them that although they must be feeling very unfortunate due to his absence and feeling that they should realize that he also always thinks of them and he always wants to be united with them, and it's just simply by providence. We were talking before about how, what is it like, why is there night in the spiritual world if everything is self-luminous, and why is there providence in Krishna's pastimes that that even Krishna apparently is unable to overcome, but he's being forced by circumstances, because he has to kill some other demons and because he has to protect Vrindavan. But he explains it like this to the gopis, that really everything I'm doing is just for you and for all the residents of Vrindavan. You're the heart of my heart, and I don't care for anybody else but Mother Yashoda and the cowherd boys and the people of Vrindavan that I grew up with, and especially you gopis. And he told Radharani, especially you, Radharani, of all the gopis, I love you the most. And but he instructed them that he's never really separate from them, and that he really, from him, everything emanates, all the elements, fire, water, earth, air, they're just part of his energies, and that he can be seen in those energies, and that when they even think of Krishna, they're associating with Krishna. And just like he explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Raso aham apsu kaunteya prapasmi sashishiryo, I'm the taste of water, I'm the light of the sun and the moon, I'm the sound and ether, I'm the fragrance of the earth, I'm the syllable om, I'm the intelligence in man. So he explains this philosophy of Bhagavad Gita to the gopis as if they needed to hear this philosophy. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's described how Lord Chaitanya rebukes Krishna after explaining that he's present everywhere, and that if by simply remembering him, she'll always be present with him. She says, "What, you have to tell me about that?" She says, "You think I could forget you for even a second? In fact, it's that remembering you that's killing me. I can't stop remembering you. I don't, you know, those in ignorance, we are separated from Krishna and we don't care. I mean, that's our disease. We are experiencing separation from Krishna. That just means that we're conditioned souls. That just means that we're not liberated. That just means we're in samsara, that we're separated from Krishna and we don't care. The pure devotees aren't ever really separated from Krishna, but by yoga maya, to make them experience those emotions and increase the enjoyment and to enjoy in that way, they experience that somehow or another they're separated from Krishna. And as we read in the prayers of the six Goswamis, the way their mood of worshipping Krishna is to say, oh, where are you? Where are you, Lalita? Where are you, son of Nanda Maharaj? Where are you, Radhe, queen of Vrindavan? Are you over there on Govardhan Hill? Or are you on Vankshivata? Where are you all now? And that mood of seeking after Krishna in great agitation because we can't bear his absence is actually a very intense form of actually being united with him. to make the pastimes keep expanding. He goes away, and then he comes back, and he goes away, but he never really goes away. This is a mystery, that when he appears to leave Vrindavan, and appears to forget about his beloved devotees, and they worry about, has he forgotten us? Where is he gone? How could he be? That he's there in their own minds and in their own hearts, in their mood of separation, and they start to imitate him and play in madness. They start to play as if they're killing demons and things, and they pretend to be him so that they help each other remember him, you know, because it gives them some relief from his absence, which is like burning them. It's a kind of ecstasy that his absence is burning them, so they relieve each other by pretending to be Krishna. One gopi stands up and plays the flute, and the other gopi, and she stands like Krishna with this bending form. Another gopi will be lifting a hill or something like that, so that they'll remember Krishna, and they're giving them relief from that. In fact, during the rasa dance pastime, the story is how the gopis curse Lord Brahma. They say, "What a fool! How awful it is that he makes our bodies in such a way that we have to blink our eyes, and when we blink our eyes, we can't see Krishna for that moment." So they don't want to even miss Krishna for a second. That's the mood of the pure devotee. So we can't understand that mood, but we can simply imagine it because we're devotees. We can simply imagine it, Prabhupada says. Non-devotees can't even imagine. But that's... So we're in training to attain that mood where we can't bear to live in forgetfulness of Krishna even for a second. And then we're constantly remembering Krishna, and everything we do in our life is done with remembrance of Krishna. We can actually be, that's the topmost yoga. We're actually united in touch because Krishna really is, and is not just some fictional character that, you know, somebody, when I was a kid, there was a restaurant run by a strange little man, and he liked those J.R.R. Tolkien books, you know, The Lord of the Rings and stuff. He liked it so much. That he considered himself to be a hobbit, and he had this whole Tolkien restaurant, which was the theme was. So people can, you know, they can have like we have Trekkies. We have this phenomenon of these cultists who watched the Star Trek as kids, and they became so fascinated by it, and they. Imagine themselves to be one character or another character. This is a perverted reflection of Krishna consciousness. You know what I'm talking about, right? These nerdy people who kind of practically live in the world of their favorite movie or TV series or novel. The devotees really do that. The devotees live in Srimad Bhagavatam, but Srimad Bhagavatam is very different from Star Trek and The Hobbit and... Because Krishna really is the absolute truth, and he is the goal that yogis aspire to meditate on if they're really successful. And if you can meditate on Krishna, you have all these qualities of vairagya vidya. You know, you become detached from all material things, and you have full spiritual knowledge, and you're not disturbed. Yang labdva chaparang labhang. Labhang, manyate nadhikang tata, yasmin stito nadukhena gurunapi vichalyate. When Krishna is describing the state of trance in the end of this, the middle of the sixth chapter, he's describing the state of a perfect practitioner of Ashtanga Yoga and how he enters into trance. He says he can't be disturbed under any circumstance. He's having attained that, he thinks there's no greater gain. Being situated in that situation, he won't be disturbed even by great dukkha, even by great sorrow and pain, because he's in touch with that which is eternal and which is beyond time and space. And all the material problems that we have, you know, some disease, we stub our toe, we get hit by an arrow or get in a car accident, these things are just temporary conditions of our material body. We can feel them in our senses. But those who are in deep trance, they're not at all disturbed by things that happen to their body. When we're like the residents of Vrindavan who can't bear to be separated from Krishna and can't forget Krishna for even a minute, they're the greatest yogis. They're in the greatest trance, in a way. They're living in the world of Krishna, and Krishna really is the absolute truth. And so they're constantly in touch with the absolute truth. And they're constantly free from any illusion, from any ignorance, from any influence of the modes of material nature, and from the threefold miseries of material life. They've actually attained the highest perfection of spiritual attainment, even though they appear to be just village people. So that's the teaching of Lord Chaitanya, that he teaches how inconceivably simultaneously one and different, that Krishna really is everything, because, as we say, he's an undifferentiated entity, because there's no distinction between the potency and the possessor thereof, that the world is a manifestation of his potencies, a transformation of his various potencies. He's directing everything through his potencies, like Yoga Maya is directing in the spiritual world, like a great set director, you know, of a play. She's arranging. The sun comes up now, and everything, and the breeze starts blowing, and everything is taking place just right for the pastime of dancing to go on, or for whatever. So she's arranging everything nicely like that. And in the material world, it's all being arranged by the three modes of material nature. Maya Devi is controlling everything, and she's making people think that they need this or they need that, and when they get it, it's not what they really thought it would be, and sometimes it's very difficult to get it, and they can't get it, and they spend their life trying to get it, and then they have some stroke of bad luck takes it all away from them, and it's very frustrating. For those who can't ever forget Krishna, life is not frustrating. Life is always there, always peaceful and satisfied, and real faith means you know that you don't need anything other than remembering Krishna. You really don't need anything other than chanting Hare Krishna. It's so simple, really, chanting Hare Krishna. You don't have to go get some special equipment. You don't have to, you know, wear a special uniform or a special kind of clothes. I mean, well, we have bead bags and beads, but even that's very simple equipment that costs a few dollars or something. And you don't really even need it. You can count on your fingers. It's everything in Krishna consciousness is very, very simple. You know, we've got this civilization that thinks that, oh, you know, to really expand knowledge, we have to have not just a big telescope on top of a mountain, but we have to send one on a satellite, you know, so it won't have to see without the atmosphere being in the way. There's another atmosphere in the way that they don't know about. That's the atmosphere of the psychology of the modes of nature, of the false conception that I'm the knower. And that atmosphere prevents them from seeing the truth. But you don't need a telescope on a satellite to know Krishna. You don't need a lot of complicated... it's actually so attractive that the sadhus can just live, wandering in the forest and eating whatever the Krishna gives them in the form of fruits falling from the trees and different kinds of herbs and roots and things that they can easily find in the forest that nobody has to even cultivate and plant there. And all the time they can be satisfied with that because they're very, very happy constantly remembering Krishna. So this whole Krishna consciousness is so simple and it's so available for everyone. And yet it's the highest thing, the most valuable thing. You all know the story of Sanatan Goswami and the touchstone, but I'll tell it quickly because it's such a nice story that someone had heard. He was told by some yogi that if he wanted the most valuable thing, he could go to Sanatan Goswami. Sanatan Goswami has that, which is more valuable than anything else. So he went and he found Sanatan Goswami in Vrindavan, and Sanatan Goswami was living with like a Babaji with just a torn cloth on and skinny
you know, no opulence, no things. But he said, how could he have the most valuable thing? He asked him, I was told you have that which is most valuable. And Sanatan tested him first. And he said, yes, if you go there to the over there by the refuse pile, you'll find the touchstone. Go get that stone and bring it to me, you know. So the guy goes and he finds it, and Sanatan Goswami says, yeah, this is actually a touchstone, and if you take it, you can make as much gold as you want. And then you could become the richest man in the world, and it's more valuable than having gold, it even creates gold. So the person was very happy, oh, I've attained the most valuable thing. He started walking away and he said, wait a minute, I think he's cheating me. If this was really the most valuable thing, he wouldn't keep it in the by the garbage. Why is he keeping it there? So he came back and he said, "What? If this is the most valuable thing, why are you keeping it in the garbage?" He said, aha, you're right, it is not the most valuable thing. Do you want me to tell you the most valuable thing? He said, yes. First you have to take that touchstone and you have to throw it in the Jamuna, where you'll never find it again. And he said, okay. So he threw it away, came back, and Sanatana Goswami then initiated him and taught him to chant Hare Krishna, because that's the most valuable thing. But, just like the gopis can't stop chanting Hare Krishna even for a minute, we think, oh, I've got four more rounds to do before I can go to sleep. How can I do them? And we want to do something else. So I wonder what's on the news, what's in the... Oh, there's a magazine. I wonder what's in the magazine over there and stuff like that. It's because we don't have that real pure devotion and love. We still have envy of Krishna in our hearts. That's what it really is. We don't like to be praising somebody else all the time. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. We don't want to... we think that we'll be more satisfied by gratifying whatever our mind and senses tell us we want. But if we learn to be completely satisfied by praising Krishna, by praying to Krishna, by making Him the focus of all our attention, we will find peace and the greatest happiness that can never be taken away from us, which is really the most valuable thing. Chintamani prakarasadmashu kalpavriksha. So I'm sorry we've gone on a little bit long because we're supposed to stop at 10. Questions, comments? We have 5 minutes of questions and comments, period. And there's a microphone there. Realizations.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Bo.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhuji, I was listening to one lecture recently, and that in Prabhupada quotes, like... Chanik Pandit says, if the people, if you want any people should be happy, like, he, other than chanting Hare Krishna, so he told, like, you should be in localization and we should do not have any credits. So then people should be happiest. So I understood, like, credits, we should not, but I didn't understand what is localization.
Oh, I don't know that particular shloka from Chanakya Pandit.
In Bhagavatam, even I didn't remember that one.
Uh-huh. The purport somewhere Prabhupada may be saying, because I don't know if they had credit cards in Chandragupta's time or something like that. Is he meaning like you shouldn't borrow money and stuff like that? I mean, there is one shloka that I know where he says that fire, disease... and debt are three things that have to be, you know, taken care of immediately, because if debt increases, it just has a way of increasing and increasing, and of course now everybody's losing their homes because they can't pay their mortgages. But
I think he is referring to varnashrama dharma.
Uh-huh.
So like simple living and high thinking.
Yes.
Yes. In that purport, he mentioned about these 2 points. So, sorry, Prabhu, this is out of context of this lecture. So,
well, localization means really that Hare Krishna, Hare Bol, welcome. It means village life is nice. Even Mahatma Gandhi emphasize that India's wealth is in her villages, that people, they have a way of living that has gone on for thousands of years, and it's very simple and organic, and it works. But everybody in modern times is thinking you have to build big tanks and motor cars. We have, the world is covered with cars. Why do we have so many cars, and then we have to cover everything with asphalt so the cars can drive around on the asphalt, and the cars are polluting the air. There are big steel cans that are going too fast, and if we get in an accident, people are getting injured. A lot of people are dying and injured by car accidents, and they're burning up all the energy that could be used for doing other things. I mean, all the forests are cut down. Everything is burned up on this fossil fuels, which is the, now they're saying that it's a cause of global warming, whether or not it is. It's a hellish situation. Why do we have that? It's because we can't be satisfied to just, make use of the things that are right around us locally. We feel like I have to drive for an hour here and then drive for an hour there, and I have to be all these other places. In Satya Yuga, people could transport themselves by meditation. Easy journey to other planets, Prabhupada explains that.
Recently I was seeing one statistics, Prabhuji. So they, like in Japan, out of 5,000, only one guy will use the car. So out of 5,000 people. So, like, they are producing good cars, but they are not using, see. It's
but they're using trains, though. I mean, it's also not... we have Mahaguna here. She can tell you. She just came. She can explain. I've never been to Japan, except I stopped at Narita Airport. But it's also a very highly industrialized society, there's a lot of mountains, so a lot of people... Mahaguna, you have to tell us about Japan. People are commuting there. I mean, they commute to work even longer than Americans, right?
In Tokyo. Yes. Easily, 2 hours. That's one way.
One way.
It says out of 5,000 people, one guy will use the car. Yesterday I saw that statistic. So they all use the public transport.
They use the trains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a very expensive train, but they commute from, they might stay 1 week in one place and get the little weekly mansion, they call it, and then they go back on weekend for the families. Horrible.
It's, yeah. I had a job in one time. I have a house in Capitola, near the beach, yes, near Santa Cruz, and I got a job in San Francisco. So I started just taking we don't have bullet train, I started taking the Caltrain. and eventually I decided I have to get an apartment up there so that I wouldn't see my wife all week long, you know. And then on the weekend I come see her. It was terrible, terrible life, People have to live like this because they don't know how to live in villages in village life, actually, historians talk about that. American historians, I went to a seminar once about community. It was a law school seminar about history and community and things. And that one person wrote an essay that showed how historians in the 1920s said, the problem is, that when we were children we had community, but now we don't. And then in the 1930s, they're saying, every age of historians were looking back to the age when people lived in a smaller, more localized, simpler way, and said, "No, that was a nicer life," and they kept idealizing the life of their grandparents, But it seems like it's been getting worse and worse over time. But in the community, and there's a great, there's a famous German sociologist. His name is Tonais, and he wrote a seminal book called "Gemeinschaft und Gesellschaft," which influenced like Marxist philosophers and communism and things like that. But the idea is that in a village, everybody knows each other, and their relationships are spontaneous. It's like your family relationships. You
you have feelings, you like what they're doing, you don't like what they're doing, based on your personal relationship. And in a city, there's transactions. The money is what matters, and you go, and you don't really care what the person is doing in their home, but you just go, and it's a marketplace, and there's a whole different kind of mood in the you know, factory industrial life, and people are missing that sense of meaning and belonging of where do I fit in with everything and stuff. You know, you go to a gas station. Nowadays, we don't even used to be, there would be a gas station attendant would come out and wipe our windows and put in our gas, but we wouldn't know that guy and what he did and what he thought about, and you know, we'd see him once and maybe never see him again for the rest of our lives. But nowadays, we don't even see the guy. We just have a robot, you know, we put a card through a slot and we do that. So I don't know the specific Chanakya shloka that deals with how you should be localized and stuff like that. So we see that... also in spiritual world that Krishna is most intimate with the devotees in the village of Vrindavan and where they tend the cows.
Yeah. In fact, last week I attended, I visited Murari Sevaka from near Alabama, near Tennessee.
Haribol Mahaguna, thank you for your association.
Prabhupada bought that land, I think, for $5,000, is 200 acres. So it's a very beautiful temple, Prabhu. Inside is a farm community where Gaur Nithai deities are there. And it is very awesome place.
How many devotees are there?
I think there is a couple of Gurastha devotees and they are serving Gaur Nithai. Yeah, recently there is no money for them, but they are still surviving.
They have all the land. Can they make a living from the land?
Yeah, they are doing that. So they are, you know, have cows. So.
So just a few families, or?
Yeah, Prabhu, I think so. Yeah, I think a couple of our devotees also visited there.
Haribo. Yeah, Prabhupada urged us to take up this process of learning how to live off the land and become agriculturalists, but most of us haven't been very good at it. I went to visit the farm Gita Nagari in Pennsylvania, and they had a great dairy herd at one time, and you know, first class garden and everything. And now it's kind of there hasn't been all that much interest in devotees going actually living that way. They, you know, people want to do other things, and I don't know. It's an important thing that the GBC keeps emphasizing, that we should try to support our ISKCON farms and we should buy produce from them to use for our temples and buy milk, you know, make curds from their cows and stuff like that. Because it was part of Prabhupada's program that he wanted us to encourage people that there's a more simple, natural way of life where, you know, maybe you don't need a lot of, you know, expensive manufactured goods and things like that, but you don't feel the loss. And if you're a devotee, you just want to satisfy Krishna, and you don't become, you know, even in the, you know, the big comp. When I was a kid, it was all a competition between communism and capitalism, you know, but the communists would get envious because, you know, in their countries they didn't have the goods, they didn't have a finer quality, and when they went to visit Paris or something like the chess, the chess grandmasters would be big heroes in the Soviet Union, you know, but they would become attracted to the you know, opulence and get things. Foreign things were always very more attractive and stuff like that. But the idea is for devotees that we become so pleased with. Of course, we don't have to be poor and stuff like that. But when we become so pleased with chanting Hare Krishna, that we can be like I was talking about before. That we can you know, devotees go and live in the jungle and they give up their jobs. Some devotees. You don't have to give up your job and everything, but some devotees go give up their jobs and give up their Haribo. And I think we're getting the high sign that it's time for Guru Puja. So, we need a tray.
Yeah, we have the tray.
I can do it. Checked. I'll do it. Will somebody sing?
Yeah.
Jai. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Yeah.